ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If I had to pick one word to describe America's history in the Middle East, I'd probably go with mistake.
But it was, the Americans believe, all a dreadful mistake.
The backpackers crossed the poorly marked border by mistake.
The war in Iraq was a big, fat mistake.
So why is it happening again? I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we actually try to learn from the world's mistakes. Find us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
As Labor looks to pass its budget tax changes this week with the Greens' support, the Coalition has signalled its willingness to pass NDIS changes this fortnight. Liberal frontbencher John O'Dunningham says Labor doesn't need to, quote, hold back just to appease the Greens after an extended eight-week NDIS inquiry was announced. And opposition leader Angus Taylor has been accused of being inert, cowardly and frozen after dancing around a series of questions about his support for multiculturalism. And while he's now conceded he believes in a version of multiculturalism, is the opposition leader trying to out one nation, as the Treasurer claims? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Claire Armstrong.
Claire, we'll come to the opposition leader's sidestepping and then trying to answer the question around multiculturalism in a moment. But first, the government has been riding high after their deal with the Greens to pass negative gearing and capital gains tax changes proposed in the budget. High because it means that it won't sort of stick around like something stinky for ages for them. And that's good and helpful because we know what happens when things are stinky and stick around. So it may help them, although that's still to be revealed. But now another deal could be around the corner, although not really, because, okay, so the government does the deal yesterday I talked about with RAF, which is basically, Greens, you vote for our tax changes, we give you longer for your NDIS inquiry. The Greens want that because then they have 8 weeks to try and monster the proposal through lots of evidence in this inquiry. Then comes along the very charming, well-spoken very wily Shadow Home Affairs Minister John O'Dunningham saying, pass it with us in the next fortnight. Now, I thought that was clever politics by him. Explain why.
I love the politics of this. It's the kind of thing that makes everyone else hate Canberra. But you've had the government for several months now explaining why it is imperative that their NDIS changes pass this financial year so that they can get going immediately on the changes from July 1. It's been a consistent kind of drumbeat from them. They finally get to a point where they realise that the Senate, as it is currently constituted, is not going to allow that to happen. They cut this deal with the Greens, and then the Coalition come along and say, well, hang on a second, you said that you really needed to get this done by the end of the fortnight. Come have a deal with us. And that obviously puts Labor in somewhat of a politically prickly position because they now have to essentially argue against the urgency that they established in the first place, because they will be in a lot of trouble with future negotiations with the Greens if they create this massive trust deficit by sort of doing the deal on the tax bill and reneging, you know, part of that agreement, which was obviously this extended and therefore delayed NDIS bill. It is tricky for Labor, though, because part of the deal with the Greens did not involve an eventual agreement to pass the NDIS legislation. So it gets quite wibbly-wobbly political. There'll be a lot of wheeling and dealing. We've still got other elements of the budget bill that need to be negotiated that will get mixed up in this when Parliament resumes after the winter break. But it was quite a tidy bit of politicking by Mr. Dunningham this morning, I thought.
It was, because he knows that it would be pretty, you know, dodgy for Labor to have agreed to this deal with the Greens and then kind of go, ah, let's go ahead. And also, you know, they are nervous about the NDIS legislation. They know they need to pull back the funding. They're arguing for that because it's been growing too fast. But equally, I mean, the chorus against it is pretty strong. So for them not to listen for longer, I think, is probably pretty hard politics for Labor. So it's not just about the Greens deal. It's also to rush it in the next fortnight, I reckon would be pretty bad, right?
Yes, and I should say as well that the Coalition's offer here isn't a blank check. They've also said they want to see some more substantial amendments to the few that the Greens have already elicited around sort of further protections for disabled people. There were some agreements around having transparency on any aspect of automation that's brought into the system, protections so that disabled people didn't have to get restrictive or invasive procedures before they could access the NDIS. The example that gets used a lot is you're not going to be made if you're a deaf person to get a cochlear implant rather than go on the NDIS. So there have been some amendments already agreed to out of that initial part of the inquiry into the bill. The Coalition want more. The Greens want a lot more. And if anything, the Greens really don't want any of this to pass. So I do think we're probably still headed for a August, September sort of passing of this bill, with the Coalition more likely to be supporting it than the Greens. But it does, yeah, just it creates, particularly for the government saying yesterday that the delay of a couple of months will cost the budget a few hundred million dollars. It gets the Coalition a few weeks of saying, well, we gave you the opportunity of saving a few hundred million dollars and you passed on it.
Yeah, it does. And building this bigger narrative beyond just this legislation that they're in bed with the Greens Labor Alliance, and they're trying to build that because it's worked before, right? Like, so it's an old trick that's had some success in past elections, of course, you know, famously Tony Abbott's defeat of the Gillard government and the kind of deal over the so-called carbon tax, you know, price on emissions. But they're also trying to deal with the charge that's coming their way, that it's the sort of Coalition One Nation alliance, because this is very much the narrative that the Prime Minister is trying to build. So it's definitely interesting stuff. Another interesting element is the part of the deal, which is small, but it is significant. They're closing this loophole, allowing Australians to use self-managed superannuation funds to buy tax-advantaged investment properties. You wrote a piece, it's linked in the show notes, about this. Why does it matter?
Well, I mean, the self-managed super fund sector will say that this isn't a loophole. It's been an issue that's kind of come up in several reviews over the last 10 or odd years that it's been in place. But essentially, in the main, a super fund is not allowed to borrow to invest. There are exemptions in limited circumstances for self-managed funds to borrow a relatively small percentage to then invest in something like residential or commercial property. Now, the Greens are arguing that if you close all of the other avenues for investors to purchase housing, the only one left being via a self-managed super fund will be where everyone flocks. There's not a huge amount of evidence that that would be the case. And as well, you still can buy these properties as an investor through funds. This is just about limiting your ability to borrow, which obviously makes it easier to make that investment. Mm. The Greens wanted that, what they call a loophole, closed. It affects, I think, about 1% of all mortgages through this self-managed super fund restricted sort of loan lending system. It's not a huge impact. I think the budget bottom line improves by about $50 million over the forward. So it's probably not going to create a huge more availability of housing, as obviously the Greens are trying to say. But, you know, maybe it does head off some kind of transfer of attention and focus of investors. The sector itself, you know, as I say in this piece, a bit surprised. It kind of came out of nowhere. Mm. There's already actually a piece of work going on around like making sure that the advice given to people who are making these kinds of investments is sound and there aren't, you know, sort of cowboys in the system exploiting it. So I think for me, it speaks to really a political decision by Labor that was what it was going to cost to get the Greens on board. And that cost is probably comparatively quite small, which says the Greens had already made a political decision to back this and they just needed a bit of window dressing to kind of show what had changed now compared to a week ago. And the people caught in the middle are this relatively small but, you know, understandably upset cohort of people who would otherwise have borrowed to invest in housing through their super fund.
Now, there's been some breaking news. We're recording this Wednesday and the Treasurer has just spoken about inflation, and it's good-ish. Headline inflation has eased more than expected in May. The ABS figures that come out show the consumer price index rose 4% in the 12 months to May. That's down from 4.2% in April. That is better than expected. I mean, it's still a far cry from that target of between 2-3%. But I do think it's definitely, I mean, like, there's undoubtedly a positive story. The Treasurer says that now it's a consecutive monthly drop in inflation. It's better than forecast, but he does say the numbers still show the pressure on the economy. But that's kind of a better set of numbers for the government than they were expecting.
Yes, but...
I know where you're going.
The trimmed mean, which is the underlying inflation, it's where you take out the kind of really volatile prices that distort that basket of goods that's used to determine inflation, rose from 3.4% to 3.6%. And that is the number that the RBA look at. And I think that as much as it is obviously very much a case of this could be a hell of a lot worse, we are not out of the woods. And I don't think any economist would say that the horizon definitely does not include future rate rises. I think there's a lot of data that still needs to come through, a lot of changes that need to wash through the system. There's obviously been a marked slowdown in things like auction clearance rates in the economy, which we can't at this point entirely deduce is whether it's the government's budget or it's the three rate rises we've already had this year washing through into the system. But it's better than expected, but not great.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And the broader kind of problem with inflation continues to be an issue like that the government must tackle, and that is a really big project. Our sister podcast, ABC Business Daily, has unpacked those figures in more details. We'll link the episode in the show notes as well. And we'll move to something that's been just curious to me, absolutely curious. So, Claire, yesterday, in fact, after I'd recorded the podcast where I said something very different, but I still think it stands, opposition leader Angus Taylor seemed to get a little lost when he was asked in a series of very direct, I thought very obvious, not difficult questions about whether he supported the idea of multiculturalism. He said, "The culture I want to see in this country is people in this country who believe in and support Australian standards." Okay, asked whether we should be a monoculture. Reason that matters is that Pauline Hanson, our preferred Prime Minister, according to polling, wants us to be a monoculture and said it in her speech last week at the press club. Basically, he wouldn't answer. He says there's all these vague words running around. Now, the issue with this, Claire, is that everyone else, including right-wingers on his side, and what I mean by that is, yeah, they're all right-wingers, obviously it's a Liberal Party, but I mean the harder right. I had Jonathan Dunningham, who is a leading, as we were saying, clever, smart, leaving the Parliament right-winger on Afternoon Briefing, defending multiculturalism. Of course, we're all different, blah, blah, all of the lines, because it's been a bipartisan position in Australia for a very long time. And but Angus Taylor couldn't manage it. He couldn't actually back multiculturalism, which became a problem for him. He should have been scoring so many goals yesterday, but he scored very few goals. And then he's had to go on 2GB this morning to try and mop it up. What's going on?
Oh, man. I was in the opposition leader's courtyard in the – it. You can really tell it's winter. It was freaking freezing, actually.
Yeah, it was cold.
And I just kept thinking, dig up, my God, just stop. This is getting ridiculous. I think at one point he asked our colleague David Spears, well, what's your definition of multiculturalism? Which is like, we're cracking out the Webster's dictionary. We're in a bit of trouble. I'm gonna torture your soccer metaphor there, PK, and say, I couldn't help but think as I stood in the courtyard yesterday that a very easy answer to the very first time he was asked what he thought about mono versus a multicultural society would have been that, like millions of Australians right now, glued to their television screens watching the Socceroos, I'd say we have a pretty compelling case for just how successful multiculturalism has been for this country. Next question. Mm. And instead, it has become now a 48-hour and counting story. He's a attempt to mop it up on 2GB, I don't think has gone much better. We got lines about Australians having a common set of values again before he finally sort of said the version of Australia that currently exists, where everyone comes here, contributes, that's not a monoculture, it's a version of multiculturalism. For the life of me, don't know how this became so hard. I think there's a lot of advice running around in Angus Taylor's head at the moment. There's a lot of concern about when to differentiate and when to perhaps appease the one nation kind of tendencies that obviously are flourishing in the conservative side of Australian politics at the moment. And I think, as you say, whether it was John O'Donoghue or Garth Hamilton, or even on the moderate side, if it's Jane Hume and Rustin, who all very comprehensively in the last day have been able to articulate not only the actual inescapable fact that Australia is intractably a multicultural society already, and to revert or try and change something is just not even anything anyone could be entertaining. It's also a really good thing. And I don't quite understand politically how this went so badly so quickly, but you probably, I don't know, maybe have insight there.
I think everything you said is absolutely accurate. I think there is a very big battle going on in the head of Angus Taylor and the Liberal Party more broadly about how to appease this growing anti-immigrant sentiment, which clearly One Nation has honed in on. It's not the only reason I think they're rising in popularity. I've said that consistently. I think it's the economics, but it is part of the story. So they're desperate to kind of hone in on that. And he doesn't want to be seen as defending sort of multiculturalism in a form that, you know, encourages this idea of too much plurality and too much difference and too much celebration of everyone else's culture but Australian culture. Now, what is that? What does that even mean? I think we should say the quiet bit out loud. They didn't, but we should, which is the idea that Anglo-Celtic culture should be supreme, right? That should be the supreme kind of culture. Now, the truth is, Australians' institutions are built on British traditions. We do have one rule of law, and we should, and everyone accepts that. This is the bit about this debate that I think is deeply problematic. There is no contest, as far as I can see it, from the left or the right, even the Greens, that we should have a different, and they're the harder left, that we should have a sort of different judicial or parliamentary system for Islamic people or my people, the Greeks. We should have our own kind of laws. No, that would be insane. No one says that. So then it becomes about the emphasis. Yesterday I interviewed David Farley. He's the new One Nation MP representing Farrah. I tried to kind of drill down into this. What is it? Because everything he seemed to be describing to me is the multiculturalism we currently have in this country. And then he said, well, you know, and I said, I've always identified as a Greek Australian, right? Well, he said it's Australian Greek or Australian Italian that he thinks is the way we should go forward. So then it becomes about emphasis, doesn't it? I mean,
and also the difference between a verb and a noun.
Totally, right? Because that's historically why people have, it's like, you know, for me, it's like logical sense of like Greek heritage, Australian citizenship,
Australian
and nationality.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Will you die in a ditch if you have to say the Australian word first? I certainly wouldn't. Like, I'm not worried about that. I can interchangeably, it does not worry me.
Oh, this is such a farce.
It's because Australian is what we are, because it's just a fact, and of course we support one rule of law, and if we don't, we kind of get laughed out of town, quite frankly, because we don't have a whole bunch of different rules. That's not how you run a country. So what's it all about?
Honestly, I just think it is a panic and it's confusion from the Angus Taylor camp in terms of not being able to figure out what he wants to say and how to say it. But more broadly on this issue, I think it's that for many reasons, including the fact that 12 months ago, Pauline Hanson was sitting on a primary vote of 6%, and to have spent any more time talking about or dissecting the types of things she was proposing and saying about the country would have been a disservice to the public that journalists are trying to serve, because it would have been a very disproportionate way to spend your time. We are only just now getting to the point where there is obviously far more impetus to actually scrutinise and start to understand what Pauline Hanson is talking about. Because if she can't go any further than saying, I don't want Sharia law in this country, which, as you have articulated, is not remotely on the cards, then I don't really understand what is meant here. Are we going to have hit squads going around and closing all the banh mi joints in every capital city in this country? Like, what does a monoculture mean? How do you get back to it? What does that look like? What are we at? Nearly 50% of the country was either themselves born overseas or had at least one parent born overseas. Are we deporting half the country? Are we not wanting our kids to learn about our multicultural history of 200 years in this country? I don't understand what she actually is proposing for Australia. And I think what is happening at the moment is a reckoning of how we now interrogate some of those ideas and some of those proposals in a way that has to be framed in a new reality, which is we are looking at a likely electoral future where One Nation MPs grow in number and are probably here to stay for quite a few electoral cycles. And I think everyone is sort of building the plane as they fly it. I think we've seen that in the way there's been reactions to things like Pauline Hanson's National Press Club speech. Everyone is still figuring it out. I hope we get there, and I hope talking about it and actually articulating we don't know what you mean.
Look,
helps.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think that the Angus Taylor dilemma about this just speaks to a lack of sort of intellectual clarity about what some of these things used to be. Like, for the right of politics, multiculturalism was a no-brainer. It just was what the country was. And then, of course, you argue for, you know, how many immigrants you think should come into the country based on what our economy needs. Like, this is all very reasonable stuff and I think fair game. But now it's getting into territory which is, well, problematic, because it's like you're policing potentially, and this goes not to Angus Taylor's proposal, but what Pauline Hanson was talking about. It's like the level of Chinese spoken in households. What I don't get that. Like, I don't get that. I understand needing English to be at a level to function in your country, right? I'm sure. But why would we stop people speaking other languages in a global world that we're participating in? I mean, China, for instance, no one's really talked about this part. China is our biggest trading partner. And we want people to speak less Chinese? Really? Like, on what front would that be useful to us if we can just talk in raw economics alone? Are you with me? Like, just,
yeah, no, I agree.
Is it not useful for your population to know lots of languages, to have sort of a sense of deep history about the way the world works? Like, that is an asset to your country. And that's why it's a bit confusing that it's become this kind of, are you this or are you that? Because that is a false choice. And that's what's happening to our politics, that people are being framed around this false choice. And the problem for Angus Taylor, going back to the politics, is that he fell for the false choice. There is no, that's a false choice. He can believe in a strong borders, very right-wing kind of traditional policy, controlling our immigration rate, all of that, and still support a properly functioning, egalitarian, multicultural society. That can be done all at once.
Absolutely. And the important thing that I think he's also missed is that multiculturalism is not the same as social cohesion. And you saw it in the answers he was giving yesterday, where under pressure he reached for the example of the perpetrators of the Bondi shooting as an example where people had come to Australia and not subscribed to our values and beliefs. That is inherently an issue of social cohesion, or maybe of education, of economics, of all of these other issues that is not synonymous with multiculturalism. And I think a lot of Angus Taylor's colleagues have managed to articulate that they understand that in the last day in a way that it would be really great to see him do the same.
Yeah, because you're right, his colleagues, that's why I mentioned the John O'Dunham example, I thought nailed the description. And also today you say he's not mopped it up very well. I know what you mean, because he's basically like, there is no shift as far as I can see officially to the Liberal Party's support for multiculturalism yet. Unless he's trying to shift it, we don't know about it.
Well, as we were discussing before, it remains a portfolio in their shadow ministry.
Yeah, yeah. Not minister for monoculture.
No.
There's no minister for monoculture. But if they announce one, we'll let you know, hey? That's it for Politics Now today. Claire, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow on The Party Room, I'll be joined by Fran Kelly and David Spears. That's a bit of a treat. On Friday, we have something very exciting for you that I am going to announce. A chat with election icon Anthony Green about One Nation. This man knows everything about the history of One Nation and how it's tried to achieve electoral gains and then failed sometimes, and whether now they're on the cusp of something very different. So we're going to dive into that. See you, Claire.
See ya.